Hans Olsen, Scott Girard, 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. I'm coming to you live from lovely Fresno, California, Utah State, Fresno State later on tonight. Hans is back in our studios. Hans, you doing okay back there, buddy?
I'm doing okay. You got Legler, Matt Barnes, some lady. They're going over this Lakers-Jazz game, and they're throwing up different highlights. And is that Tim Legler? Is that his name? He was up there doing a bunch of walkthroughs and write-ups and things for the Jazz and what was falling apart. And then he just ended up highlighting Stanley Johnson for the last 5 minutes. So it's been great watching what ESPN's doing with the Utah Jazz right now.
Well, joining us now, Jazz insider and beat reporter for KSLSports.com. And you hear him every day with Jake Scott from 10 to 12 right here on the Zone Sports Network. Ben Anderson, kind enough to join us. Ben, how are you?
Hey, Ben.
Good. How are you guys?
Good.
When Stanley Johnson gets inducted to the Hall of Fame, who do you think will present him?
Yeah, he might have to have Gobert. Yeah, it might be his breakout game against Rudy that is giving him all this attention on the ESPN. No, he actually played a good night. He played the best game I've certainly ever seen him play. And he was in the league for a while and was a lottery pick. So good for him to come back and go full circle and show out for the purple and gold.
How much of that was him doing it, and how much of that was the Jazz allowing him to do it?
A lot of it was the Jazz allowing him to do it. He can't take advantage of the opportunity he's given, so he certainly can't take that away from him. But at that point, Snyder was pretty interesting after the game, where he said, you know what, I mean, we were just getting cross-matched on who was supposed to be defending who. So too often, Jordan Clarkson was found himself, you know, defending LeBron James, and maybe Philip Vaughn, and Rudy Gobert found himself defending Stanley Johnson, who would pull him off the paint or would get into the paint and get a layup and, you know, have the Jazz backpedaling too often. And that was one of the reasons why they lost, certainly why they played so poorly in the fourth quarter. So the Jazz were making plenty of mistakes and looked very tired at that in the fourth quarter, which is almost surprising considering they'd had 3 days off before playing Sunday night in Denver. They should have been relatively well rested going into that game.
Ben Anderson joining us right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. I mean, we'd seen some issues in terms of this team with Rudy Gobert off the court and not to be surprised by it, but how concerned are you with teams and their ability to draw Rudy out of the paint and then really attack them at the rim, much like we saw last night, what we saw in that Clippers series?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be the issue that the Jazz continue to clean up. And, of course, it's difficult to do if you've got five guys who are going to stand out there. Especially if they're hitting shots, the Lakers certainly didn't do it at an incredible level last night. But if you've got teams that are going to go small, the Jazz have to be willing to punish them. And again, it's not just the defensive end. Sometimes it just has to go to you've got to get Gobert the ball down low. And the times they were willing to do it, he scored. He was 6 of 8 from the floor. He gets to the free throw line. Or Stanley Johnson, we saw. I mean, just hugged Rudy Gobert at one point. Just fouled him. He said, I don't have any chance when I'm pinned under the hoop and Rudy Gobert catches the ball. It's better to foul him, get a side out of bounds, or get him into the penalty. And the Jazz just miss him. The Jazz just don't give him the ball. And too often, I think there were opportunities where they were sagging off Jordan Clarkson, and I remember one specific opportunity where Rudy was wide open, and Bojan Bogdanovic threw a skip pass to Clarkson, who took a three and missed because he was just off last night. And really, honestly, it was a good shot from Clarkson. It's not something you would drop and say was bad, but you have to fall back in love with the layup a little bit. You have to fall in love with the dunk a little bit over the three, especially when Rudy Gobert standing there by himself.
Ben, we're going to get a better connection. Your phone's kind of cutting out on you a little bit, so we're going to have Lloyd try to reset and see if we can get a better connection there. But the Jazz, with a disappointing loss last night, dropping a game to the Lakers, and the offense really kind of, for the most part, letting them down in the fourth quarter, outscored 29-17, and hence the Jazz were stuck at like 11 points in the fourth quarter until about a minute and a half left in the game.
Yeah, and just watching the personnel that did it too, and I know you've got LeBron James, one of the greatest players in NBA history out there, but having Stanley Johnson and the play that Legler just worked through, Scotty, four Jazz players had position on a LeBron James three-point shot that was missed. It hit up off the iron. Stanley Johnson finds his way between a couple of Jazz guys to get that rebound to push it back out to LeBron and eventually ended up back in his hands for a shot. It wasn't just what Stanley Johnson did for you offensively. He had that big rebound. He had another big assist that went out to Bradley. Like, he beat you in so many different ways that was so frustrating.
Yeah. Ben Anderson's joining us once again. And, Ben, LeBron is LeBron, and he's going to create issues regardless. But the knock on this Laker team is there's just nobody there in a supporting role to really help him out, especially as they're dealing with some injuries. Just based on that alone, how disappointed should Jazz fans be that they weren't able to? I mean, look, they're better than the Pistons, but still, it just kind of has that same kind of feel to it as after that Pistons game.
Yeah, the Jazz should have won that game. I mean, they were up by 10 points. They had momentum. They seemed to have the answer for how to beat them. Now, there was certainly more urgency from the Lakers to have to win that game, which is unfortunate because the Jazz had lost four in a row before beating Denver on Sunday night. So you would have hoped the Jazz would have felt a little bit more urgency to win that game, and they certainly took their foot off the pedal, which I think is some of the human nature that you deal with. And yes, they were probably tired, but they got too casual in the fourth quarter, not figuring out ways to attack better, and that includes being sharper and getting Rudy Gobert the ball when he needs to you know, beat up that smaller lineup. But the Lakers certainly had a reason to be playing as hard as they did in the fourth quarter. LeBron James had heard the narratives. He's still one of the best players on earth, if not the best player on earth. They were literally coaching for Frank Vogel's job. So there were reasons for them to go out and play as hard as they did. But, yeah, I mean, the Jazz need to be winning these games. You can't blow a 22-point lead to Detroit. You can't blow a 10-point lead on the road to a bad Lakers team, even if they have LeBron. These are games you have to win. And I fear if you're a Jazz fan, you're going to get to the end of the season and you're going to look back at why you're sitting in third or fourth place in the standings. And you're playing a team you don't want to, and you're going to say, well, man, there was that week where you lost to Toronto and Detroit and Cleveland and Indiana and the Lakers within 8 days of each other.
How much, and I know that there have been a lot of excuses, and we can make a lot of excuses through this losing five of the last six for different guys being off the court, but how much can you look at that and say, oh, Hassan Whiteside being off the court made a difference?
I mean, I certainly think it did hurt the Jazz last night, especially when the Lakers are able to go small, where one of the things Whiteside can do, and he's not a perfect player by any means, but one of the things Hassan Whiteside can do is punish those smaller guys, and he does a better job of posting up than Rudy Gobert does, and the team seems more willing to give him the ball to punish them. So, you know, when you do have Rudy Gay having to play out there and try and play center, that's a disadvantage, and it does give the Lakers some opportunities to score in the paint, but also to not really feel threatened by a score, because Rudy Gay sometimes just sucks the air out of the ball the same way Jordan Clarkson does by over-dribbling. So by not having Hassan Whiteside out there, you blow up some of your pick-and-roll defense, you blow up some of those, or I should say offense, you blow up some of those lob opportunities. And I do think that is hard. I think that has been quietly disruptive for the Jazz offense over the last week. So it will certainly help when he comes back and when he's available for them. But again, that's a minor reason why the Jazz, I think, are losing games right now.
Well, I mean, you look across the board, and I think Rudy said it best, in which he mentioned if we hit a couple of our threes, we'd be all right. I mean, you have Boyan 1 of 9, and some of the other issues that the Jazz were dealing with from the 3-point line. Donovan's 0 for 8, Rudy's 1 for 8. It just feels like, and Boyan 1 for 9 from the field, 0 for 4 from three. If somebody's able to connect there, then you're in pretty good shape, and that's not going to happen every night. So you take a little solace knowing that it took one of a season standpoint, a historically bad shooting night for the Jazz to lose that game.
Here's where I don't envy Danny Ainge, Justin Zanuck, Quinn Snyder to an extent, whatever say he has in the front office. If you look at the last six games, the Jazz have lost five of them. Well, throw out the Toronto game because you had Elijah Hughes and Jared Butler starting. It doesn't matter. That wasn't a real basketball game. And then you lose second night of a back-to-back where none of the players had been together because half the guys went to Indiana and half the guys weren't in Toronto. And then you didn't have Joe Ingles or Rudy Gobert who were out in the COVID protocol. So that game's already wonky. Then you lose again without those guys in COVID protocols in Detroit when you had a 22-point lead and you had a weird loss. Whatever. The Cleveland loss. You literally did not have a front court. You didn't have a single big player on your roster other than Eric Paschal. Of course you're going to lose that game. So I think that they're not excuses, but they're somewhat understandable why you lose that game. And then the reason you lose last night to the Lakers is not at all the same reason why you've been losing other games this season. The Jazz rarely lose games when they hold a team to 101 points because the Jazz score more than 100 points basically every time they step on the floor. So that's a different problem, and yet the only thing you see, and rightfully so, is that the Jazz have 5 losses in 6 games because ultimately the only thing matters are your wins and your losses. That's what counts at the end of the year. So if you're trying to fix this team,
diagnose the problems, understand what you need to do before the trade deadline, which is a little more than 3 weeks away, this last week has created a ton of urgency to make a move and fix the problem, and it's done absolutely nothing to give you an idea of what the problems actually are.
Ben, I wanted to get a thought from you on Joe Ingles since he's returned from his protocol and he's back on the court, and when he's actually on the court, not getting thrown off the court. You know, Joe Ingles and where he's at in his game right now, are the Jazz getting what they need from today's Joe Ingles?
No, not at all. Not even close to what. It's certainly not what they expected. And, you know, maybe it's not fair at this point to expect that much from Joe Ingles, who played a lot last year, never misses games throughout his career, then had to go and carry a team in the Olympics and probably gave his kind of last great push of energy he has as a basketball player to his country and achieved an incredible thing by winning a bronze medal, which is something Australia had never done. So to come back then and expect him to be good at whatever he is, 34 years old, three kids at home, hasn't seen his family. Like, I understand all the reasons why Joe Ingles is not performing at the level he was last year, including just father time catches up with you. But regardless, the Jazz are not getting what they need from a guy that they want to play for 25 minutes a game and play arguably the most crucial role for anybody off the bench, which is running the offense. He doesn't need to be a great defensive player, but he's got to be big and he's got to stay in front of guys. He has to hit threes. He has to pass the ball. He has to be that calming presence among what can be a chaotic second group. And he just doesn't have the ability to do it right now for whatever reason I listed. And that's tough because he was so good last year and has really been so good during his Jazz career that as soon as that's not there, they haven't really had an answer to turn to.
So back in the day, and this is, you know, you were growing up. I wasn't in the market yet, but as a Jazz fan, you always remember the time where every summer it felt like Karl Malone and Larry H. Miller would get into some kind of a public spat, and then it get resolved by the time camp would start, and then all would be forgotten, and then it'd recycle again in the summer. So with that said, you've been covering this team for a while, and Rudy every now and then will say something that he's ticked off about or says something that might resonate poorly in a locker room, and then we all kind of move on. Do you strike up these last conversations of that, or do you think that's a sign of something that may run a little deeper?
I do think it's ultimately how he operates, and that's even what Donovan Mitchell said on Saturday, which I thought was kind of some nice quotes from Donovan, that he could have turned around and taken a shot at Rudy. He could have done it last night and taken a shot at Rudy after the game if he wanted to and pointed out that he was the only starter that had a negative plus minus. Like, there are still ways you can say, you can put Rudy Gobert in a bad spot and say, you're not doing this or you're not doing this. And he hasn't done that. So maybe Donovan Mitchell has started realizing that's just who Rudy Gobert is. You have to live with it. You don't have to love him. You just have to win with him. And Rudy can be hard. He can be pretty blunt. And I don't think it's great for the team. I think there's certainly better ways to handle it. But I do think there's an acceptance that if that's his biggest flaw, he offers you so much more on the court that you can probably live with it. You would love it if he was perfect. You would love it if he didn't have those kind of off-the-court issues where, you know, he says things that seem to put his foot in his mouth or seem to create some division in the locker room. But overall, his positive is so much greater than his negative. And maybe that's just the point where Donovan Mitchell has gotten to where, yeah, Karl Malone's going to be dramatic. He's going to be mad that Greg Ostertag gets paid. He's going to be mad seeing other stars, you know, start in the All-Star game or get more attention than he gets. And Larry H. Miller would get fired up about it, too, and then they would all come together in this marriage and made it work somehow. Maybe, I guess, that's just what you have to do. You wish that wasn't the case, but you're better with Gobert than you are without him, and I do think Donovan Mitchell recognizes that.
Do you believe they've got a couple of games here in front of them coming up tomorrow and then one on Friday against Detroit, and both here at Vivint Arena? Do you believe those games are kind of well-timed home games where maybe they can – catch their footing, even though that loss to Detroit looms? Do you feel like these two teams might be kind of a help fix to what they need?
Man, they better. I mean, if you lose these games, something's really, really wrong, because there has to be a ton of urgency in that locker room. This cannot be any longer, hey, you're going to turn it on in the playoffs. And I do think that's a huge part of what the Jazz are dealing with. That, you know, the interest in the regular season is hard to have after you've had the difficult losses you've had and you know what's expected of you in the playoffs. But they've also said over the last week they can't expect to just flip the switch and fix all their problems come playoff time. They have to be building these winning habits, which was kind of where Gobert got started last Friday, that where he put his foot in his mouth about the perimeter defense. These winning habits have to start now, and there has to be a ton of urgency after this loss last night to go out and crush Houston, to go out and crush Detroit, because next week you've got Phoenix twice and you've got the Warriors. I mean, you have a really, really tough schedule.
It's tough.
You're going to need to make sure you're sharp and have momentum, because I do think this team plays well when they've got momentum, and they don't have any right now, and they've got to figure out a way to jumpstart the engine.
Ben Anderson with us right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Should there be a level of pins and needles in this locker room in terms of trade deadline? Do you think that the Jazz will explore some options?
I would be stunned if the Jazz don't make a move, honestly. I think you know you're not – I mean, the second unit clearly isn't good enough right now to give the Jazz what they need. And it's not because of, you know, anyone individually, I don't think. It's a lot of what the skill sets and how they overlap, how many guys like to dribble, how few guys like to move the ball. And then the fact that you really do need to give Rudy Gobert help on the perimeter. Like, Royce O'Neal's had a really, really good offensive year, and all we can look at is that he gets beat on straight-line drives, and rightfully so, because it's a glaring weakness right now on this team. And that's not Royce O'Neal's fault, because he's having to guard, you know, on any given night, the best player on the opposing team, and he's just not who he is. He's not that type of player. And you have to put guys in situations to succeed and do what they're capable of doing, and the Jazz clearly don't have a guy who's capable of staying in front of, you know, an elite offensive player. And it would just help them significantly if you had a guy who could do that. And then put Royce O'Neal on the second best player. Like, Royce can probably do that pretty well. And then you have still the best defensive player in the world behind them in Rudy Gobert. If you get to the point where Royce O'Neal is your third best defensive player in your starting lineup, Mike Conley is your fourth, and Donovan Mitchell, who certainly doesn't look like the issue as often in the playoffs as he does at times in the regular season because he plays a little sharper, then I think you might really have something. You've got to figure out a way to do that. That's assuming you get a starter-level player. But I do think they probably have to make a move to shore up some of the defense that just isn't there right now.
Well, Ben, we appreciate it as always. Great stuff. Thanks for all you do, and look forward to reading you at KSLSports.com and again hearing you tomorrow from 10 to 12 with Jake Scott.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
That is Ben Anderson right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.